Hi, friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where each week we share an idea on the Parsha and how it relates to Jewish history, along with all the books and articles I've read over Shabbos to learn more about it. Reminder to sign up for our weekly email that you can get through Substack at readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com, where you can get a write-up of our weekly class along with all the links to the articles and books that I have discovered on my Shabbos reading journeys. Thank you so much to our sponsors and friends, Janet and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Several dozen times throughout the Torah, we are reminded to treat converts with respect. The Torah insists that we love them and treat them justly because we too were once strangers in the land of Egypt. So it would be understandable if one were taken aback when the Talmud compares converts to a skin ailment. Converts are difficult for the Jewish people like tzaras. Kushim gerim liyisroel kisapachas, the Talmud writes. The Talmud justifies this analogy based on the similarity of the words v'nisbechu, which is used to describe converts, and that same term is also used to describe a form of tzaras. Why is the Talmud being so callous to converts? Aren't we supposed to love them? Weren't we too once strangers in a land, and we should love and accept all converts? Tosos cites several explanations for this passage. One reason why converts are difficult, Tosos explains, is because since they are newcomers to Judaism, they are not proficient in all of the laws and customs, and therefore they oftentimes have improper practices that can influence the rest of the Jewish community. Another reason Tosos cites, notably from Rev Avram the convert, so he himself, the rabbi offering this explanation, was himself a convert, is far more charitable towards converts. Essentially, converts, due to their passion and commitment, joining the Jewish community make the rest of the Jewish community look bad. A convert who leaves their birth family and home oftentimes better understand the precious privileges of Jewish life far more than those born and raised within the Jewish community. As someone who has worked with many who have joined Jewish practice later in life, I see the merits, honestly, of both of these approaches in Tosos. There is an organic rhythm and cadence to Jewish practice that those raised within the community have, which converts often struggle to embody. On the flip side, converts undoubtedly exhibit the type of commitment and sacrifice that few who are born Jews, especially within the current generation, fully inhabit. They have an appreciation for Jewish tradition and Jewish life that those born within the community rarely muster. Regardless of which approach of Tosos resonates more with you, there's still a very obvious question. Why does the Talmud compare converts specifically to tzaras? Maybe the analogy is highlighting something positive, maybe it's negative, depending on which approach in Tosos you take. But why make the analogy at all? Is it really just because of this similar word, sapachas v'nisbechu? It's kind of, they sound the same, that it's used to describe both? Surely there must be more to this analogy. One more question. There is a strange requirement in the laws of tzaras. A Kohen must declare the skin ailment, either tahor or tummy, pure or impure. It doesn't matter if the greatest rabbi in the world definitively states its status. It specifically must be a Kohen who determines the final status of the skin lesion. In fact, Rav Menachem Kasher, in his work Torah Shlema, has an entire essay that considers whether or not there was a special rabbinic ordination for Kohanim that gave them like actual expertise in the declarations of whether or not something is tzaras. More likely, they probably didn't have that kind of ordination, is that the Kohen just needs to make the declaration of pure or impure. Someone else can even determine whether or not it's actually tzaras, but the final declaration must come through a Kohen's declaration. So why is it so important for a Kohen to be involved in this process? To understand all this, let's explore the tug of war between innovation and tradition that has marked and shaped Jewish tradition itself. I just want to quickly give a shout out because a lot of the history in today's shiur, I benefited greatly from the research, number one, of my dearest friend, Rabbi Jake Sassone. There's a wonderful shiur that we link to on the Substack, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. You can look it up, from Rabbi Moshe Sokoloff, as well as all these other articles that I will quote. 2 years before the industrialization, messianic hopes, and future podcast names associated with the calendaric year 1840, Heyo, a French Jew named Isaac Singer figured out how to bake matzah with the use of a machine. After the machine's invention in France in 1838, the innovation slowly made its way to Frankfurt, Germany. It was also used in Posen, Poland, where Rav Shlomo Eger, son of Rabbi Akiva Eger, served as rabbi. The Jewish community, of course, is no stranger to innovation. Printing presses, medical progress, and general societal development have all posed serious questions for Jewish law, life, and practice. Sometimes the Jewish community adopts a more stringent approach, sometimes it's more lenient approach, and sometimes it oscillates between different approaches over time. The case of machine matzah, which embroiled much of rabbinic leadership at the time, is just one of many such cases, but an illuminating lens to consider Jewish communal reactions to innovation. In the first decade or so following the advent of machine-baked matzah, rabbinic leadership was fairly quiet. That all changed in 1859. Rav Shlomo Kluger, one of the foremost leaders of Galicia, authored a responsa prohibiting the use of machine matzah for use on Pesach, on Passover. He raised three primary concerns. Number one, intentionality. Matzah used at the Seder, the Talmud explains, needs to be baked with specific intentionality for use as a mitzvah. This intentionality is called lishma, meaning for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah. Matzah baked by machine, Rav Kluger argues, does not fulfill that requirement. That's a fairly technical halachic objection. Objection number two, not just lishma intentionality, was chametz. Machines cannot be easily cleaned, and the residual dough that may get stuck within the machine can become chametz. Admittedly, this could be an issue with hand baking as well. Later machines, the one that we use today, are certainly way more reliable than those used at the time of Rav Kluger. And finally, the third reason, after lishma, after chametz, is tradition itself. Given the advent of reformers, Jewish leaders were especially wary of innovations to Jewish practice. The emerging reform movement had introduced many changes without a basis in Jewish law. So many Jewish leaders, including Rav Shlomo Kluger, were suspicious of new changes that were introduced. Even if it could be halachically justified, it was better to draw a strong line prohibiting machine matzah, lest other more problematic reforms reshape the very fabric of Jewish practice. It does not appear correct to me, Rav Shlomo Kluger wrote in a different response, that we should introduce any new innovations nowadays, specifically in this generation where everything that is added to religious life is really detracting from it. Kol hamosif goreya. Additionally, Rav Kluger was concerned that traditionally hand-baked matzah was always round and machines are only capable of baking square matzah. Tradition. We only eat round matzah and this only can create square matzah. As always, along with innovation comes societal upheaval. The industrialization of the 19th century had many anxious about the future. Machine matzah was no different. It's not right, writes Rav Kluger, that machine matzah will also displace many in poverty who rely on baking matzahs professionally. Not everyone was so cautious. Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, one of the leading rabbinic figures of his time, author of the many volumes of responsa known as the Tshuva Shoel Umeshiv, he actually has one responsa where he talks about meeting Rav Tzadok. That's a whole nother story, but I had to mention that here. He was one of the first to explicitly permit the use of machine matzah. Marshaling both halachic and sociological arguments, this would actually make matzah much more affordable. He staunchly defended the practice. I happen to find it very moving that on each side of this debate, they were very concerned about what these sociological innovations would portend for those in poverty. Very similar to a lot of the conversations taking place with AI. Perhaps more surprisingly was the support for machine matzah expressed by Rev Avraham Shmuel Binyamin Sofer, son of the famed Chassam Sofer, who also supported the use of machine matzah. In his responsa, entitled Kassav Sofer, he explicitly departs from the rabbinic aphorism popularized by his father, the Chassam Sofer, who used to write Chadash Aser Min HaTorah. It's a really a play on words on a different rabbinic principle, but he was invoking it to say, innovation is prohibited by the Torah. Instead, Instead, the son of the Chassam Sofer, the Ksav Sofer, argues that machines are far more reliable than normal bakers at the matzah factory. So he departs. He says, we're not going to invoke Chadash Aser Min HaTorah. This is a good innovation. Soon enough, compendiums for each side of the issue were published. One work entitled Moda'a LeBeis Yisroel, Proclamation to the Homes of Yisroel, published by Chaim Dembitzer, he was the original person who asked the question to Rav Kluger, collected all of the responses of those prohibiting machine matzahs. Do you think we have a link to this in our weekly email? You better believe it. Reading Jewish History in the Parsha.substack.com. A separate work, cleverly titled Bittel Moda'a, responded. The first work that collected all of those who prohibited was called Moda'a LeBeis Yisrael, a proclamation to the Jewish people. And the separate work that collected all of the works permitting the use of machine matzah was called Bittel Moda'a, the nullification of the proclamation. This halachic question became a referendum on the Jewish approach to innovation itself. One rabbi was even fired for prohibiting machine matzah, and he later appealed to Rav Avram Bornstein, author of the responsa Avnei Nezer, for guidance. In a different responsa, the Avnei Nezer wonders how anyone would use machine matzah and not fear being burnt by the coals of their words, a reference to those who prohibited the use of machine matzah. Some families were even torn apart. Rav Mordechai Zev Ettinger vociferously argued with his brother-in-law, Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson's permissive rulings. Their relationship was frayed. Ads were placed in newspapers defending each side. The Avnei Nezer recommended at the end, just everyone bake matzah for themselves. Don't rely on machines or bakeries. Everybody just make your own matzah. Rabbi Arnold Heisler, in his 1967 master's thesis entitled The Problem of Machine-Made Matzot as Reflected in the Responsa of the 19th Century, you better believe we have a link to this, carefully details each side of what he describes as a long and acrimonious debate. The surge of change that the modernization of the 19th century brought highlighted the competing instincts of innovation versus tradition that continues to this day. Questions such as Torah translations, praying in English, and the bounds of inclusivity continue to divide rabbinic and communal leadership. Yet the luxury of time allows one to see both strands of communal leadership, those who embrace progress and those who defend tradition, to really be working together to ensure the underlying fabric of Yiddishkeit is never torn asunder. And this brings us back to converts and Kohanim. The Rambam was the first to note that much of the development of Jewish tradition has been through the leadership of converts and Kohanim. It was a convert, Yisro, who established the Jewish judicial system. The great sage of the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva, descended from converts, as did Rabbi Meir, who serves as the anonymous voice, what's known as a Stam Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah. As Rav Yeshayahu Horowitz, known as the Shlach HaKadosh, writes, it is worth considering why most of our oral Torah was given specifically through converts. Kohanim as well serve an outsized role in the development of Torah. The mouth of the Kohen protects wisdom. The verse in the second chapter of Malachi states, seek Torah from his mouth. Ki sifse kohen yishmeru das v'torah yivakshu mipihu. The very description of whom we seek Torah from is described as a kohen. In the chain of Jewish tradition listed in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, Moshe kibbel Torah m'Sinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, and then it goes through each generation. The first rabbi mentioned individually in that opening Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon HaTzadik, who, of course, served as the Kohen Gadol. Converts and Kohanim each respectively represent the competing approaches to change and innovation within Jewish tradition. Kohanim represent those who protect tradition. They are deliberately privileged above the rest of the community with specific laws regulating who they marry and what they can eat. They are wholly set aside from the winds of communal change. Converts, however, arrive from the outside world to the Jewish community. Immersed in the secular world, they understand how to build bridges from within. It is no coincidence that the master translator of the Torah into the commonly spoken language of the time was, of course, Uncas, who was himself a convert. Actually, it's very beautiful. One of the traditions that we have of kissing the mezuzah, of showing that almost spontaneous love for mitzvos and the mezuzah that lie in every home, is a product of a convert who I think really embody the preciousness and love for Jewish tradition and never taking it for granted. The two main approaches to drasha, the two schools of drash, are Rebbe Yishmael and Rebbe Akiva. And you guessed it, Rebbe Yishmael, who has a much more conservative approach to the text, was a Kohen, and Rebbe Akiva, who's much more creative in his approach to drash, was from a family of converts. Kohanim protect our tradition. Converts innovate from within tradition. Sometimes I like to think of the archetypal approaches of the Kohen and the convert as the same as the distinction between the companies Coca-Cola and Apple. When Coca-Cola was founded in 1886 by John Pemberton, he wanted a beverage that would be distinct and instantly recognizable. In 1916, they're one of the few companies that patented a silhouette. The very contours of a Coke bottle are patented. Why? Because they said, we want the bottle of Coke to be so recognizable that it will be recognized even if it shatters on the ground. Its formula remains a trade secret, which famously made kosher certification quite tricky. What disrupts a company founded upon such a rich legacy of tradition? Innovation. When Coke changed its formula in 1985 and introduced New Coke, remember that? The public was outraged. People called their local politicians to complain and put pressure on Coke to go back to their original formula, which they eventually did a few months later. Some national institutions cannot be changed, remarked Senator David Pryor of Arkansas after hearing Coke reverting back to its classic formula. Much like Kohanim, Coca-Cola is about being classic. Innovation can destroy companies like Coke. Apple, on the other hand, was founded upon innovation. Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them. I am, of course, reading from Apple's Think Different campaign that you may remember from the 90s. And it concludes, while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do. Apple's mantra was think different. As Walter Isaacson explains in his biography on Steve Jobs, they insisted upon the slogan think different, even though think differently is more grammatically correct, because they wanted something that captured the total innovation, not incremental change, that Apple tried to represent. Steve Jobs hated market research. He would invoke Henry Ford, the famed anti-Semite, famous line, "If I'd asked customer what they wanted, they would have told me a fact." Faster horse. Instead, he came up with the vehicle. Apple is all about innovation. And what endangers a company like Apple? Stagnation, tradition, and complacency. When Steve Jobs passed away, the primary concern was whether their next CEO, Tim Cook, would be able to keep a pace with the innovation associated with Apple. Much like converts, Apple is associated with innovation. Tradition can destroy companies like Apple. Converts are difficult for the Jewish people like Tzaras. The famed Gemara, the Talmud says it in Kiddushin on 70b. It's what we opened up with. What is behind this analogy? Someone with Tzaras is cast out of the community, but we're still told to love and accept converts. This Talmudic statement is not about, God forbid, marginalizing converts, but rather about the process through which the innovations that converts represent can be incorporated into the community. A Kohen must make the declaration whether or not a skin ailment is actually Tzaras. The Talmud is stating that the interplay between innovation and tradition is the same as converts and Kohanim. The only difficulty we have with innovation is when it undermines the tradition that Kohanim must preserve. And Jewish history itself is the story of the interplay between converts and Kohanim, tradition and progress, where emerging from this necessary tug of war is a Yiddishkeit that is both traditional and innovative, instantly recognized recognizable like a bottle of Coke, but also constantly changing like an Apple product. There is one other place where the term sapachas, used in the Talmud's analogy between converts and saras, is interpreted to refer to a segment of the Jewish people. When discussing the traditions of Passover, the Medrash Rabbah states, Amar Rebbe Brechia, Kenegin mi Amar bachutz lo yelin ger, ela asidim gerim lihios kohanim misharsim bebeis hamigdash, shene'emar, vanilva hager alehem, v'nisbuchu al beis Yaakov, v'ein v'nisbuchu ela kahuna, shene'emar safcheni na el achas hakohunos, she'asidim ochlim melechem hapanim. Let me translate. Rebbe Brechia states, in the future, converts will serve as Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, as it says, and the convert will join them and cleave to the Jewish people. And the word V'nisbechu only refers to Kohanim, as it says, Safcheni na, please assign me the duties of the Kohen. It's nearly an identical drasha to the aforementioned passage that compared converts to tzaras. Except this time, it's not referring to converts, it's about Kohanim. A future where converts serve in the temple is about the integration and resolution between the tugs of war between converts and Kohanim, where in the end, every communal innovation that has been accepted by the Jewish people will be welcome with the same integrity as our classical tradition. The strengths of Apple and Coca-Cola, so to speak, eventually merge together within the rich tradition of Yiddishkeit, where all along the voices of innovation and tradition will not be seen as antagonistic to one another, but as complementing one another to ensure the proper stewardship of Jewish life and progress throughout all generations. In Jonathan Sarna's fantastic article, How Matzah Became Square, Manischewitz and the Development of Machine Matzah in the United States, he explains how the story of machine matzah is really the story of traditional Judaism itself. It is about the interplay between innovation and tradition, the approaches of converts and Kohanim, and the ever-unfolding story of the resilience of Jewish tradition in an ever-changing world. So thank you again for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. To get the links to all of the articles and books mentioned, be sure to subscribe to our weekly Substack. It's just a weekly email. Don't get scared. ReadingJewishHistoryInTheParsha.substack.com. Once again, that's ReadingJewishHistoryInTheParsha.substack, SUBSTACK.com. And thank you again to my dearest friends and sponsors, Jana and Lior Hoden family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Wishing you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, a happy, sweet, and uplifting Pesach. And thank you all so much for listening, and keep reading each and every Shabbos or Pesach.